You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. We have the weekend's cinema choices up for discussion today, and on our silver screen is Creepy, The Unknown Girl, and Chirac. And talking me through all three of those films is the film critic, Tara Judah. Tara, welcome back to the show and welcome back to London.
Thank you very much.
You've just been across to the Cairo International Film Festival, and of course we heard a little bit about that on the cinema show last week. But let's begin today's slot of films with Creepy. This is from the director Kiyoshi Kurosawa, about a psychopath who exerts a malicious hold on his neighbours. The director is well known for his horror films. Now, what do you think about this film when compared to his previous films, though, Tara?
So Pulse is probably the most famous of his previous work, which is from 2001. And I think any J-horror fan will be pretty familiar with that one, particularly because it's the one about technology kind of taking us over and really strange concept that makes you unsettled and not want to look at your computer screen afterwards. So I think the premise of this film is very different. And in a way, I wouldn't actually call this a J-horror film. I mean, I really think this is more in the thriller, dramatic thriller territory. There is something a bit gruesome that we do find out at one point in time, but it's overall mostly about psychological horror and the problems of what delving into the family unit can really bring up. So this film really is more, I think, a commentary on Japanese social and domestic codes, codes of activity, codes of morality, codes of conduct that they have in society, and the types of ways in which that either can be very prying or also the absolute opposite of that, which is that there's lots of things closed and behind closed doors that we don't see and we don't really understand about our neighbours. So I think the film's more of a commentary on the sort of social fabric in Japan than it is a J-horror, which means that fans of his earlier work like Retribution and Pulse will probably be slightly disappointed because it's not quite as gung-ho with the really chilling narrative. What lets the film down is the pacing. It's a bit slow. It takes its time to get its point across. And to be honest, it's a little bit labored. It's also not very plausible. And the major problem there is that we have seen multiple times where the police turn up, but they don't have backup. And there's, you know, sort of like soul people going into bad situations on their own, and you think, well, they've just told, like, there would be 20 other police. I mean, I know, you know, you've got to suspend your disbelief and go with it, but there are a couple
not that
of
far.
Yeah, there's a couple of times in the narrative where it's a bit distracting. It seems implausible. What's interesting about the film and what's best about the film, I would say, is that it really kind of digs at the complicity that we don't maybe step back when we realize we're doing something wrong because we want to kind of keep up those impressions, and that maybe we're a bit too interested in seeing the demise of others, and maybe that might sometimes also be at our own personal detriment. So I think the film has a little bit of a dig and a little bit of something quite interesting and timely to say, but as an overall dramatic thriller, it's just not quite tight enough. It needs to be a little bit shorter and a little bit punchier.
Well, something that is short and punchy would be a little clip we have from this film. Let's have a listen.
あの人、お父さんじゃありません。全然知らない人です。ねえ、ご主人と僕とどっちが魅力的ですか？夫婦に迫り来る不気味な闇。二つの謎に隠された真実とは。待て、何が望みだ？別に何も。
Tara, when I think about J-horror, I'm often reminded of one of the first J-horror films that I saw quite a few years ago, which was called Audition. And I do recall a particular scene where there was a man tied up, his ankles being sawn off. It was one of the most disturbing and horrifying things I've ever actually seen in a cinema, and it has stuck with me ever since. Tell me that we're not going to be facing any sort of graphic horror scenes like that in this one.
No, but for people who've seen Audition, I'm just going to say this. Creak, 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 creak.
Oh, God. All right. While I try to rinse that out of my brain, Creepy is out now in Japan, South Korea and Brazil, among some other nations as well. Let's quickly move on to another film. This one is from the Darden brothers. It's their latest film, The Unknown Girl. Now, Tara, I actually had a chat with the Darden brothers when they were here in London a couple of weeks ago for the cinema show. And they were refreshingly open and honest about the rather, well, let's say less than satisfactory response they got at Cannes when they premiered this latest film. The film did not attract many fans at Cannes. The crowd at Cannes can be pretty notoriously prickly, though. Tell me about your impressions of The Unknown Girl.
I think this film's fantastic, and I think it's a real shame that it was not received very well on its initial release at Cannes and other festivals. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays in cinemas, particularly here in the UK. I think anyone who's familiar with the Dardenne's body of work is going to be curious enough to see it as a starting point. Anyone who liked their most recent film with Marion Cotillard is probably also really going to be interested to see this film. Once again, it's a female protagonist and it follows her very closely. And it's very much like their entire body of work. You know, it's a social realist drama, very closely shot with a documentary kind of naturalistic aesthetic, where we follow her over a period of a couple of days. Something's gone wrong. There's a moral issue at stake and she's got to wrestle with that. And I think what's really great about their films, and particularly this one, is that it's such a tiny moment. You know, it's those moments in our lives where we make snap decisions to do or not to do something. And for this particular character, for Dr. Jenny Davin, what happens is she's staying late at work. She's already an hour past the time she should have been there. Somebody's ringing on the bell and she tells her intern, who's about to get up and go answer it, not to do so. The fallout of that is that the young woman who came desperately ringing on the bell at her door late at night was then murdered, so and found dead the next day. And so she finds out this. Nobody knows who the girl is. They can't find a record of her name, if she's, you know, a legal migrant, an illegal migrant, where she lived, who her family was. And this becomes really distressing to Jenny, this idea of an unknown human that nobody can come and claim or grieve for. And so she takes on the weight of that grief herself, and she goes basically into a kind of very far-fetched search for the identity of this girl and to find out what happened to her, who saw her, who killed her. You know, someone must have seen something is basically what she's thinking. It's a small community where she lives. And it really overtakes her, this idea that perhaps the notion of ignoring something or being silent is actually complicit in the problem. And I think that that's a microcosm in this film of a situation, but also reflects what we see in the greater example of society and around the world, which is that so many things go unnoticed, particularly with the refugee crisis recently. We can really see this as also a commentary on the fact that, you know, if we don't see people's faces and know their names, is it really easy to ignore what happens to them? And what is the weight of being the person who did nothing when maybe you could have done something? And if she'd just opened the door, maybe she could have saved that woman's life.
It's such an enticing premise. And I know you referenced that the journey she goes on is fairly far-fetched, but often I find that the strength of a filmmaker, or filmmakers in this case, is often found in that ability to take a situation that is very dramatic and, to put it in a realistic setting, would be fairly far-fetched. But through these this emotional pull and, in some cases, manipulation, but not in a bad way, they take you on this journey that actually fully absorbs you and makes you completely believe it. Is that what you found when you were watching this film?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's two reasons for that. One is the actress and one is the filmmakers. So Adèle Haenel, who plays the lead role, people might remember her from Water Lilies, Le Combattant recently. She's also been in the Guy Madden film, The Forbidden Room, amongst a horde of other things. And she's really a fantastic actress. And I think that what's great is that she doesn't overplay it. There's no high melodrama. In fact, for the most part of the film, she's almost reserved in one note. And I can see why someone might even see that as a criticism, that she doesn't, you know, display a lot of emotion. But I think what's great about that is that when we do get it in the tiny moments where, you know, someone throws a panettone at her from the window in their apartment, is the smile on her face is so genuine from all of the rest of the problems in her life that it, you know, it feels like a naturalistic performance. It feels like a real person. And I think the strength of that additionally is down to the Dardenne brothers, and that's because of their history of filmmaking. So for anyone who's not familiar with their work, before they made their Palme d'Or winning, you know, internationally acclaimed films, Rosetta and L'Enfant, they actually were working with documentary. So they were documentary filmmakers. They had a studio and a production company for documentary. So they also produced for other people's documentary films. And so they've always had a foot in this idea of realism and document and the observatory nature of the camera. And I think their camera work, it's extremely consistent throughout the body of their career, and every film that they've made is the way in which we examine the subjects. And it's really close, and it is from a different point of view. It's not the character's point of view, but at the same time, it's very much intimate and it's not judgmental. And I think that's the singing success of their work.
Why do you think that people had such a strong reaction to this particular film? I have to say that I often find that with critics at Cannes, there can be this ownership of something. So when you've been in the festival before and you have done very, very well and you've presented something that people have loved, it can almost be like the critics say, we own you. You've done well at this festival before. Come back and thrill us even better than last time. And if you don't reach up to that bar that you've set so high, then we're going to be very upset.
Yeah, there's two problems here. I think you're absolutely right, and it's very frustrating. One is that a lot of critics are really keen to hate or love a movie. That's because it makes for, you know, good writing, good radio, etc. People like extreme positions on things. If you can polarize your opinions, it means that it's easier to digest and read as a review. It's easier for people to understand what your opinion is and to know whether or not they want to go see it or not go see it down the line. I think, honestly, sometimes that can be a bit like lazy criticism, though, because usually there's value in a work even if you don't love it. And the second thing is, I think that, you know, it can as well, people are making these snap judgments because they've got to get their review out right away after the screening to be relevant. So they don't have long enough to think about the film and let it sit with them. Beyond that, there is also this problem that, yeah, the Dardenne brothers are extremely well-known, famous filmmakers. We've been seeing films from them for a number of years. People love their work and they want every film to touch them in the same way. And let's be honest, having an emotional experience in a cinema doesn't always happen, even with your favourite filmmaker, time and time again. I think that the film is deeply interesting, and I actually did feel an emotional connection to it. I can see why some people wouldn't, but then I also think that that raises questions for me about how you feel about the idea of humanity, and maybe there's a little bit of guilt in there because you also have turned your back on others. I mean, I think most of us are guilty of that. We're not all activists every minute of the day, and this film really taps into that, and it makes you feel for the times when you're not being an activist, and it makes you think about your actions towards other people.
And if you'd like to have a think about what it might actually feel like to have your film absolutely savaged, then you can have a listen back to The Cinema Show. The Dardenne brothers and Xavier Dolan both featured on that program. Head to monocle.com. The Unknown Girl is out now across Europe. And now we have one more film to discuss. The final film for today is Chirac. It's the new film from Spike Lee. And it's been described as a satirical musical drama. I'm pretty much sold right now. Tell me, Tara, how did you feel about this one?
Personally, for me, this is a really split film. So, I mean, I love it on the one hand, and I found it a bit frustrating on the other. I think actually that's fine. I think that's a good thing. And I would encourage people to see this film. I think it's a really important work. I think it's really relevant. So we haven't seen a Spike Lee joint for a while. I mean, he's been making films, but they don't always get out to us. And for me, this film is more along the lines of something like Bamboozled, which was berated and savaged critically, but I think actually also a really important film, because he's touching on issues that often don't get aired, and he's giving a voice to something that needs a voice. Now, it should be said that there's lots of controversy around this film. I'm going to try and get that out of the way at the beginning so that we can move on to talking about it. But the film has been really heavily criticized for the fact that it doesn't show the brutal, savage realities of what's going on in Chicago. So the reason it's called Chirac is because it's the amalgamation of Chicago and Iraq. And basically what they're saying is there's more deaths by, you know, rifles in America, in Chicago, than there are in the Iraq war. More Americans are dying, you know, in Englewood, basically, than they are in Iraq.
That's astonishing.
It is astonishing. And the statistics are correct. And they come up at the beginning of the film. I mean, while they made this film, during the 5 weeks of production, 65 people were shot and killed in the city. So there's been a real outcry from Chicago saying it's not savage enough. And it's really actually in poor taste to make entertainment out of a situation that is devastating. So there's that on the one hand. On the other hand, there's also the issue of the name of the film. So before it even was able to be released as Chirac, Spike Lee really had to fight to keep the title, because the powers that be in Chicago didn't want, you know, the city to be seen in a negative light. They didn't want this actual name that locals call it to be well known, I suppose, globally around the world, where the rest of us can kind of have a glimpse of what's going on there. And, you know, they sort of suggested he wouldn't get the city tax breaks if he went ahead and called it that. But he fought them, called them bullies, titled his film that way anyway. So that's some of the controversy.
Well done, Spike.
Around the film, exactly. Then there's the issue that, you know, this film actually got financed from Amazon. So it's $15 million worth of support from an online platform, which is really different and unusual. And part of that is because it's going to have a limited cinema release. It's mostly available on Amazon Prime. Part of that is to make sure it gets out to as many people as possible. So it's also a really interesting model in terms of distribution. Then it's a musical that is based on a Greek tragedy. So this is the story of Lysistrata. It's an Aristophanes play. 2,500-year-old Greek comedy that mostly I think a lot of people will be really familiar with, and it's retold in Chicago. So the story, for anyone who doesn't know, is that Lysistrata is really devastated during the Peloponnesian War and mobilizes all of the women in the community to withhold sex from the men so that they will have peace between the Trojans and the Spartans. And so what we have in this film is that modern day scenario where she really rallies this fantastic actress, Tiara Paris, who was in Dear White People and also in Mad Men. And she rallies all the other women in the community, both from, you know, her side of the clan and from the other side, to basically say, no peace, no pussy. That's the slogan. It gets repeated a lot in the movie.
It's catchy.
It is. It's extremely catchy. There's lots of song and dance. It's really hilarious and lively. The Greek chorus is played by Samuel L. Jackson. So, you know. It's a wonderfully entertaining film. It's not light-handed. It goes straight up for it. You know, it has penis envy written on the nuzzle of a tank. It's really overt with its references. There's jokes about Homer, Oedipus, you name it. But I think what this film really does is it's talking about sex, gender, power, and fighting. And what's really interesting about that is that it's making a parallel between the power that men think they can have over women's bodies and other people's lives. So this idea of violence and the body and withholding the body as an act of peace that, you know, is really interesting. And I think that's the thing that majorly came out for me during the film, but also the notion that young people are dying, children are dying. And if we think about the fact that this is a heteronormative context that the film has constructed, you know, women denying men sex, then we're also seeing an issue of denying the future. And I think this is, you know, this is really metaphorical. It plays to a number of levels. It plays to the level of sending your men away to war, sending the men in repeatedly, black men in America, away to prison or, you know, into the ground, means that there's not really a future. This idea of no future. And the women saying, you're killing our children, we're going to have to stop having a future. And I think that's really devastating and really powerful. And there's a really strong message that comes through. There's also the regular Spike Lee, you know, kind of rant about it's all about the problems of rifles, the NRA, their links with the government, the accessibility of guns, illegal guns, guns to minors, the problems and the systemic problems of slavery and now incarceration as a new form of slavery in the US, not knowing the history, not being educated, coming from poor socioeconomic backgrounds, having no access to good education or jobs. There are no jobs, especially none above the minimum wage, you know, for certain people in society. And so the film raises lots of really interesting issues, but it is also light entertainment. So I think there's a point to be taken from the backlash against the film that says it does a disservice by not really telling us the story. But also I think it raises lots of really important issues in a way that will actually be more accessible for a broader audience.
Well, let's hear a little bit of a clip from Chirac.
It all started with a gorgeous Nubian sister.
What's up, Spinner?
They call her Lysistrata, a woman like no other.
You just try taking away their guns.
Okay, them dirty poppers. Because when my gun go boom, I'll make sure a Trojan end up in the next.
All right. Well, what else do they love?
Repeat after me. I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
It's satire, Tara. I don't know how anyone in Chicago could possibly have a problem with that. That is Chirac, which Manola Dargis at the New York Times described as urgent, surreal, furious, funny, and wildly messy. It's out now in the US and will be released in the UK next week. And that indeed brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my fantastic guest today, Tara Judah. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time on Monday. We'll be rounding up the week in art. But for now, thanks for listening. Goodbye.